Hello and welcome to the Green Room at Furnitubes. I'm your host, Catherine Barrett, and we're here every month with a new episode. Join us for industry musings, interviews and discussions exploring all things landscape architecture, street furniture and urban design.
Hi, this is Catherine Barrett and welcome to the Green Room, and thank you for listening. Please remember to follow us on your podcast favourites so you get updates on every episode. Today is the first in our leadership series focused on landscape architects and their career journeys, and I'm really delighted to be joined today by Sarah Bridger to talk about her career in both the public and private sectors as a landscape architect. Sarah trained at Kingston University and Edinburgh College of Art and has worked in private practice at Gillespie's and a range of other landscape architects and public practice with Norwich City Council. Sarah is in a great place to reflect on the impact and opportunities afforded by both sectors and what she has learned. Hi, Sarah. How are you?
Hi, Catherine. Thank you very much for having me today.
Oh, it's great to have you on. And I know we've chatted before about both sectors. So tell us a little bit about you and your journey, you know, why you wanted to go into landscape architecture and how your journey sort of taken you.
Well, at sort of 17 years old, when you're sort of bright eyed and bushy tailed, even being aware of landscape architecture is quite rare.
Yes.
When I started it, I didn't really know what I was letting myself in for, but it seemed to be a good balance of all my academic interests. So whether it's biology, geography, art. And then from there, I went on Kingston because its creative approach to landscape architecture really appealed to me. And they basically taught me what landscape architecture was. And I learned how to approach the design process, which is probably one of the most important things for a landscape architect to be aware of. At Kingston, I had a multitude of amazing tutors and they pushed us out into the world where I went straight into the financial recession of 2008, but I was very lucky and managed to get a year out position with a great multidisciplinary team working with urban designers and landscape architects. From there, I went on to work in Weymouth. From Weymouth, I then went up to do my postgraduate at Edinburgh College of Art, where at Edinburgh, they have a completely different approach to landscape architecture to the one at Kingston. So I learned a whole new skill set and then came away from there and went straight into private practice at Optimised Environments, where I worked on predominantly really large master plans at the pre-planning stages, followed by 5 years at Gillespie's working on really high profile public realm projects, which was a fantastic way to begin a landscape career.
There are a couple of things that I'm really interested in that you've kind of teased there. The difference between Kingston and Edinburgh, and that might be just, you know, what is the difference? And then also then what pushed the move from private to public? You talked about the types of schemes you were working on and how is that different to the types of schemes you're working on now?
That is a lot of questions, Catherine.
Yes.
The difference between Edinburgh and Kingston, I think, was Kingston was almost more urban design focused, and their approach to students' work was that we were very self-directed and we didn't necessarily have to stick to landscape architecture. We could take our projects in whichever direction took our creative fancy. Although I wasn't there for very long, so I was only there for a year, I found Edinburgh had a lot more structure to it, had a lot more technical modules, and to be honest, there were just a lot more students. So both universities had amazing qualities. And I think because I was there for longer, I'll always be Kingston at heart. I learned so much at my time in Edinburgh, and I'm really happy that I went to both schools.
Right.
It was a challenge because I think sometimes with postgraduate studies, it's easy to go back to a staff and a place that you're used to.
Yeah, it's a good challenge to yourself, though, to go to something that took you in a different way. Yeah,
definitely. I have to say, Edinburgh was probably one of the most challenging years of my life so far for personal and professional reasons. But
right.
Your other question was regarding why I've shifted from private sector to public sector.
Yeah.
Now, my shift might not be permanent, but at the time, I left private sector to change locations and get a fresh perspective. And directly after I handed in my notice at Gillespie's, my father unfortunately had a stroke. I ended up moving in with my parents and having a 2-year career break, I guess, working as a full-time carer. During that time, I had a lot of time to think and evaluate what was important to me professionally and what I wanted to contribute to the discipline and who I wanted to serve through my work. And public sector gives you that very valuable experience, very precious experience of being able to directly serve the communities in the area that you live, and not just the privileged 1%. Entire range of demographics within Norwich I get to work with and for. And that's kind of was my thinking behind it, was that I'd spent many years working in the private sector on developments that I simply couldn't afford.
That to me resonates really well.
Okay.
Purpose of landscape architecture, and I've got a follow-on question actually about what good landscape architecture is, but I think sounds to me with private there are still some amazing schemes to work on.
Absolutely.
And they're possibly challenging and pushing ideas, but they're representing and catering to a percentage of a demographic or a percentage of a population, whereas public sector, public realm, you are really looking at how to improve the urban landscape and therefore the lives of the community that really you're serving. And I think serving is a really great way of describing it.
Absolutely.
And with the schemes that you've worked on, you can obviously observe the community, engage with them, understand what they're looking for, as well as other departments within the council in terms of how to bring a district or a borough forwards.
Absolutely. In the public sector, well, in the private sector as well, you have many, many cooks in the kitchen. And I think particularly in public sector, when your projects are ones you visit regularly, you see people commenting, you see how people are using those spaces. People feel like they have a platform to voice their opinion with public sector projects, I think a lot more freely than with private sector projects, predominantly because they are in the public eye.
And public funded.
And exactly, it's direct linked to your tax money. And I think that's a valuable asset to the way the council works. And we are always accountable to our population, to our communities. So, yes, that was what attracted me to public sector. And also, I think I've become more interested in politics over the last few years for many reasons. I was really interested to understand how the public sector functioned and why it had the limitations that we all see.
Has your sort of perception of what good landscape architecture is been reinforced, or has it evolved as you've benefited through seeing the kind of the different facets of how landscape architecture can be implemented?
I wouldn't say it's changed too much. I think it was always that good landscape architecture is holistic. Each project will have its own defining characteristics. And a good landscape architect will always address all of the facets and functions of that space or landscape. That doesn't change whether you're in the public or private sector. That should always be our underpinning ethos, in my opinion anyway.
And in terms of how you navigate a project or a programme, you've talked about having lots of people involved in the public sector. You've got more sign-offs and more people, but in the public sector, would you say there are more sign-offs or more stakeholders? What's the process for evaluating and moving a project through?
That really depends on the project because,
right,
for example, our landscape team at Norwich City Council, we work as a consultancy, so we might be working for the Broads Authority.
Yep.
We have many, many projects with the Highways Department at County Council. But we could also be working for the City Green and Open Spaces team. So the process depends on the scale, who's involved, where the funding's coming from. So that's a difficult question to answer.
You've answered really by saying, you know, there are lots of different stakeholders in the public sector. Mm. You've also then got different teams that you're serving. So you're not just serving Norwich City Council. You're also then sort of parachuted into different teams who've maybe got different objectives.
Yes, that's completely correct. I think it's very different, the sense that most of our projects in the public sector don't require planning applications in the same way that the private sector does.
Right.
And we often the client side role.
Yes.
Than we would in private sector.
Because you are the client, that makes sense.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So we kind of play both sides in that sense. That's a very beneficial position to be in.
Yeah.
But it can also be incredibly challenging. As a student landscape architect, it's not really what you think of You think, oh, I'm going to be designing all the time.
And sign-offs.
No, there's a lot of admin as well. When you get to do the design side of a project, it makes it that much more precious.
I guess as well, actually, you've got a much higher likelihood of seeing your scheme, using your scheme in the near term.
100%. My time at Gillespie's, I had so many projects and very few of them I actually got to see built in my 5 years at Gillespie's. And Norwich City Council, I've had two projects, one very large, one very small, that I've seen actually built and finished, which is very, very satisfying.
Yeah, that must be really gratifying. It sounds like not the speed, speed's the wrong word, but kind of the cycle of a project is probably more condensed, I guess, with the public realm.
That is a very nice way of putting it, Catherine.
I think we've talked before about funding timeframes as well, because you get to see a project happen, but I guess it's also quite challenging because you've got to do a lot in a short time frame. Tell me a little bit about how the funding timeframe also impacts that and how that impacts the kind of the speed at which you deploy new projects or new schemes.
So I'm still very new to this area of landscape architecture, but from what I've experienced in the last 2 years, yes, the funding timeframes have an enormous impact on how fast you're delivering the projects. And that can impact the scope and how much you can realistically achieve in that time. Because if you have a very short time, you have less time to coordinate between disciplines, explore maybe more complex or untested approaches, which are so important in achieving sustainability. So quite often you will fall back onto more tried and tested approaches, which is excellent because it means that you have surety that they will be working and you know how, for instance, maintenance will interact with them in the future. You can confidently say to the maintenance team, yes, we know this is going to work because we've used it here and here and here.
Right.
But in terms of moving forward on an environmental front, it's always important to try new techniques, use more untested methods, which is challenging.
Having the ability to do basically research and develop and test different interventions. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And also just communicate with all of the necessary stakeholders, which takes time.
Yeah.
But we have a very knowledgeable and skilled team. Most of my team has been in public sector for their whole career. And therefore, I have a wealth of knowledge at my fingertips as somebody that's coming in from outside on how the local government machine functions and who I need to speak to, which is often the biggest hurdle.
I understand that. Sounds like you've learnt. But also, if you dip between private and public, you're taking the learnings with you. So if you went back into private, you'd have an understanding of how the public sector works that would help if you were to be working for a public body again, presumably.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. That was 100% of my thinking when I went into public sector. You never know where your career is going to take you and when there's going to be an international pandemic and, you know, these sort of unpredictable things in life.
Yeah.
But yes, you know, technically my contract comes to an end very soon, but moving forward, wherever I go, I will take the knowledge that I've gained.
And I know that Norwich is doing some really fantastic regeneration work through you and your colleagues. And we've seen some other cities that are really making bold changes to the landscape and the dynamic of their cities. Where else have you admired and seen as being successful?
The obvious choice outside London would be Sheffield. I have passion for sustainable drainage and
yes,
I think they've done a really beautiful job with their Great Green project.
Yep.
I think more cities should take that approach of making spaces that function better for pedestrians, cyclists, more beautiful, but also have this environmental functionality to them.
Do you think there's an appetite for more sustainable projects in the public sector, or do you feel like the landscape architect team has to drive it? I don't know if you've insight into how it possibly was achieved in Sheffield or the work that you've done in Norwich.
No, I don't know how they achieved it in Sheffield. I would love to know more.
Next podcast.
But I think that there is a huge appetite to have environmentally sustainable projects. I just think that there is a lack of understanding of how to achieve that. And that's where cities that consult their landscape architects or bring in landscape architects at a very early stage to define the scope of any regeneration projects will be a distinct advantage because we can help them form a strategy that will lead to an environmentally sustainable project.
Even if they're large scale interventions, it's a more of an early stage holistic approach to how do we make this work.
Absolutely, because projects that I've worked on at Norwich, the scope has already been set out in essence by, say, even the funding application.
Right.
So the landscape architects really need to be involved at that early stage, as they are in Norwich.
Yep.
Because we can then say, well, we could put suds here, we can include cycle lanes here.
Yes.
Pedestrians would benefit from this. Trees need to have this to make them healthy and alive.
Yep.
So I think that having landscape architects influencing early stage funding applications or urban design strategies is crucial.
Yes. And this, I think this is where you were saying at the beginning, your interest in politics, but it's also, I guess what it means is how you influence the health of a city, right? Ultimately.
Absolutely. I know I'm biased because I'm a landscape architect, but improving the spaces that we live in and creating places for people to exercise and commute healthily to work is going to have a much bigger impact on reducing the pressure on the NHS than improving the services within the NHS. Well, they have to be done in tandem.
100%. But it needs to be thought out together at a much higher level than individual projects in isolation.
Yeah. And at the City Council, we get funding from different sources. Predominantly, the new projects are funded by central government funding. And the focus on of that funding will depend on which department it comes from. So whether that's Department for Transport or Department for Housing, it really focuses the emphasis of the project. And that's something that we have to work to in order to get the funding. So I think we need more funding at a local level. The local level can determine what its most important needs are.
Oh, so the funding's coming from central
a lot of the time, yeah.
And so you're fulfilling a scope or a brief from a centralised source.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which can be really important, but it doesn't necessarily fit with the time and the space.
Or the community.
Or the community in that time. So I personally believe that we need more funding at a local level.
How far ahead are you being asked to look in terms of what the spaces that you're looking to regenerate or develop? How far ahead are you looking and how flexible are you making those spaces when you're thinking about them? It needs to work for now, or is it needs to work for the next 10 years, 20 years?
That's a difficult question because obviously there's a huge range of projects. But for instance, transport projects look very far in the future because those projects, we're not going to get the opportunity to redo those anytime soon. But at the same time, with each project, you have to combat the timescales that you're given by the funding and also the constraints of the site. So often there's a meeting in the middle of the time. You know, ideally, we'd want to be looking really far ahead.
Right.
But working with the constraints of today can be quite impactful.
So talking about impact, where do you feel that you've made the most impact to date?
Hopefully, I think I have. The spaces where people spend their daily lives, I think. Whether it's just walking your dog through the park, commuting to work or going to the shops, or having a rest on one of your lovely benches that we've just installed on St. Stephen Street. You know, that's where I'd like to say I've had an impact, because although the public might not know about it, all those design decisions add up to the spaces that you live in. I've just been working on a large high street regeneration, and seeing people using it in the last 2 weeks has been really, really satisfying and very rewarding after so much hard work.
Yeah, and you've got a lasting kind of reminder of the hard work that's gone into it. You can see it, which is great.
Absolutely. And then there's things that you can't see, like the fact that when drainage works, nobody notices.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's always very satisfying because nobody else sees it, but you do.
Yeah, and you know.
Mm. Absolutely, especially when it's something like a rain garden. Or if you go back and you see, your trees have matured or your planting's evolved, that's all incredibly rewarding.
Thank you so much, Sarah. It's been really great to talk to you, and I think really beneficial to understand or see the perspective of someone who's worked in both sectors, who has such a passion for the impact that landscape architecture has and pride in the output, really, of the output being the success of the communities that the landscape architecture has served. So thank you very much for coming in and chatting to us. And I've got two more questions for you that we ask everyone who comes in. The first one is, what is one thing that landscape architects and the landscape architects profession can do right now to help combat the climate disaster?
You've picked a simple one then.
Yeah. Sorry.
One of the keys with landscape architecture is education. And so I think keep advocating for sustainable design.
Yep.
And educating those around us on what we can achieve as landscape architects and through landscape. And even when you feel like you're banging your head against a brick wall, just keep going and possibly get political.
Yeah, you're in a good position to influence. Last question. If you could put a bench in one spot in the world, where would it be and why?
When I think of that, it instantly made me think of Richmond Hill looking down over the Thames. It already has huge numbers of benches, so I don't think it needs any more, but it's a space and a view that I've always come back to throughout my career. And looking down across that ever-changing river landscape is unbelievably beautiful to me.
So every day and every season is
Absolutely.
Different. Same view, different view.
Exactly. And I know that, you know, a landscape architect worked
Yes.
very hard to protect that view, which makes it even more special.
Thanks, Sarah. Lovely to have you on. Thank you very much for coming in.
Well, thank you very much for having me.